In the spring of 2018, Tom Piazza climbed into a 1977 Coupe de Ville with the great singer-songwriter John Prine, taking a Florida road trip that soon evolved into a deep friendship, full of jokes and tall tales over epic meals, afternoons digging around antique malls and record stores, and long nights playing guitar and trading songs. Eventually, they decided to write Prine's memoir together, and Prine shared intimate, often hilarious stories of his youth and family in Chicago and Kentucky, his breakthrough into the national spotlight, his riotous early years in the Nashville country scene, and much more. When Prine died suddenly of COVID in April of 2020, that unfinished memoir evolved into an intimate narrative of the artist's final years. The new book is Living in the Present with John Prine by Tom Piazza, and it is a great pleasure to welcome Tom Piazza back to the roundtable this morning. Tom, thanks very much for being with us.
I'm doing fine, Joe. It's good to hear your voice and good to be back at the roundtable.
I love having you on this program. The first thing I did when I looked down, I saw a quote on the book from Bonnie Raitt, who I actually am going to go see perform tonight, and I'm so excited about that. But she says, for all of us who love and dearly miss John Prine, what a gift it is to be able to be with him again, both through his own words and in Tom Piazza's wonderful recounting of their adventures, forging their deep late life friendship. It's a beautiful thing, a beautiful blurb, but also this late life friendship is beautiful as well. How did it occur?
My partner Mary and I went to see John for the first time back in, 2016, when he came to New Orleans. And I had heard his music before, but seeing him live really it touched me on a deep level. And so when I heard that he was going to come back through New Orleans at the beginning of 2018, I made arrangements to meet up with him. I thought there might be something that I would want to write about there. And as it turned out, there was, and I met him backstage that night, and it was a funny thing, Joe. It just clicked. It was like one of those things. You know, we saw each other and he was kind of looking at me, almost like we had a shared joke in some kind of way. And we made arrangements for me to come visit them at this vacation house they have in Florida. And I did that, and John and I took a road trip in his 1977 cherry red Coupe de Ville that he had just bought on eBay and had shipped down from Pennsylvania. And we went to Sarasota, and we sat and talked and yacked, and it was kind of an instant friendship. And that became an article in the Oxford American magazine. And we just became friends, visiting back and forth in Nashville, New Orleans, wherever else we could manage it, staying up till 3 in the morning, playing music and having fun. And he asked me to, after about a year and a half of knowing each other, he asked me to write his memoir with him. And we got a start on that in the spring of 2020.
And then he did pass a few months later, which we'll talk more about. But in those early days of just digging around antique malls and record stores and the like, what was that? You're getting to know somebody, and obviously you're enjoying that friendship.
Oh, to say the least. Our senses of humor were kind of similar, or if not exactly similar, they fit together like two parts of a two halves of a whole or something. He cracked me up, and I'd crack him up. So there was all that, and then plus we both loved music, and we loved playing music together, and that was, man, what a thing in life. And also just I think we had a similar view of a lot of things and certain kinds of shared experiences. It was precious, man. It's obviously, as you know, that's not something you can count on
No.
necessarily. New friendships as the years go by,
That's right. Was it when it progressed into you're going to write a memoir? It's not just two guys tooling around in a Coupe de Ville. When it's going to be a memoir, does the tenor of the conversation deepen and change in any way?
That's a great question. So when he asked me finally if I'd like to write that book with him, it was something I had to think about because, it can change the nature of a relationship or put a different light on it. But once we kind of got started, it just that concern just melted away. It was, there's a certain performative aspect to an interview. Always, whether it's, on air or just on paper. So I was able to draw John out in ways that were comfortable for him to talk about his early life, to talk about his family, to talk about growing up and his early career outside Chicago and Maywood, Illinois, and then and finally to talk about his early years in Nashville. This was a long weekend. We got so much done. And his stuff about coming to Nashville was extraordinary. You'd meet these sort of legendary figures, Johnny Cash and Cowboy Jack Clement and all these folks. So it just felt totally natural. It never felt strained. All what he said was just, you steer me where you want me to go. But I didn't have to do a lot of steering. All I had to do was mention a couple words, and John would just, the stories came out of him just as natural as could be.
Chicago and Kentucky being his background places.
I think for him, that area of Kentucky, Muhlenberg County, where the Everly brothers were also from, and I think that loomed very large in John's memory and imagination. He used to go there in the summer times, with his family, only for a couple weeks though, and it seems like this huge thing, and it was huge, I think, for him emotionally. But it was sort of a big center of his, I think, imaginative and emotional life. Chicago was a whole different thing. When we were talking about what was going in the book, he started talking about all his juvenile delinquent friends that he had in Maywood, Illinois, and some of the antics they got up to, which could have easily landed any of them in jail. And then, of course, there was the draft and just the fact that John, by total luck, did not get picked to go to Vietnam. He ended up in Germany for that duration there. There was just so much to talk about, and we got such a good start on it.
And of course, I assume at the core of it is talking about the music, talking about his artistic qualities and how he grew as a musician.
We didn't actually really talk about that in that light so much. I mean, he talked to various writers, about how he would write songs. But, he started as a mailman in Maywood, Illinois, and so he would take his lunch hour or whatever, sitting someplace and writing songs. So there was all that. But as far as actually talking about the mechanics of songwriting or how he got to this or that, melody or whatever turn of phrase, we didn't really discuss that. That was all just kind of it wasn't something that we addressed directly. What we did was we would sit around the dinner table when I was visiting him in Nashville, especially. We'd just sit there really until all hours of the morning playing songs and sort of the choice of songs, and he'd come up with a song idea. Oh, let's do this Dylan song, and then from that would remind me of another Dylan song, and then that would remind him of another Dylan song, and then I'd think about a Jimmy Rogers song, or he'd think about a song by Townes Van Zandt, or what, and we just would keep going and going and going, and I think that is what really says something, I think, about the nature of John's involvement in music. He loved songs, and he loved sitting around and playing songs. It wasn't, a lot of musicians, very fine musicians, you know, a lot of them are friends of mine. If they get to a certain place in their career, aren't necessarily really inclined to sit around playing. I think this is the way I said it in the book, even with a skilled amateur. They spend a lot of energy in life trying to make a public persona, a public presentation, right, that serves them well on stage. But there's this telling moment in this Johnny Cash record. So Johnny Cash was in the studio making a recording of a song by Billy Joe Shaver, the great songwriter, and it was called If I Give My Soul, deep song. And Johnny's starting to record it. You can hear it in the studio, and he kind of, you can hear him start shifting and kind of going, he goes, "Get off stage, Cash." In other words, don't be trying to construct something here. Sing the song from the inside out. And that was what John loved. That was really, I think, what John loved. And it's certainly some of the best times I've ever had in my life, sitting around just doing that.
Tom Piazza is our guest. The name of the new book is Living in the Present with John Prine. What was his idea? What was his mission statement, if you will, for the memoir?
Well, we had both read and really admired and enjoyed Bob Dylan's memoir, Chronicles, Volume One. Still waiting for Volume Two. Because what Dylan did in that memoir was he didn't follow a sort of timeline. He would sit down at different times in his life and sort of said, "Okay, what's happening here?" And he'd sort of spin out a kind of improvisation on those little what would you say areas of memory. So John wanted to do the same kind of thing. He said, "I don't want to get stuck in stuff I don't want to get stuck in. Let's just follow things where they lead," which is totally congenial to me. So the idea was, let's just let them roll. We're going to have a memoir of a life. We can sit down at any place we want to sit down and see where we go with it. As it turned out, the beginning of our conversation toward the memoir, which was at the very end of February 2020, as we know, that was sort of the foothills of the COVID onslaught. So, but we had this wonderful weekend, and so we talked for a bit about his early days in Chicago, early days with his family in Paradise, Kentucky, Muhlenberg County. But then we also started talking about, we jumped forward, I don't know, 2 decades to the late 1970s when he got his start really playing a lot in Nashville and met up with this kind of Falstaffian bon vivant record producer, songwriter, cowboy Jack Clement, who really is a kind of a legendary figure. And then we just kind of went with that. And there's marvelous stuff about meeting Phil Spector and writing songs with Phil Spector. So anyway, there was all of this kind of, let's go here and let's go there. And we just accomplished so much in those 2 days. And I have no doubt that if we had kept going with the memoir, it would have had this kind of beautiful quilt-like quality to it. As it was sort of the beginning of a true narrative of his life. We'll never know how that book would have really ended up. Because it was cut short by COVID.
You have said this, and it's the title of the book, but Living in the Present with John Prine. You say he liked to be in the present.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, John, that was what John liked. John liked whatever that current is that's generated by, especially this. It's generated by being with other people who are of like minds. If he was with somebody who he thought was trying to I don't know, sell him something or make an impression on him, I think he would have taken the first door out of the room in his mind. He didn't like being present for that. I think what he loved was doing the things that brought you into focus with somebody else in a shared moment. Playing music, certainly. playing pool. Hey, eating. He loved eating big meals, going places and just having friends around and just doing that. So someplace where the sort of visual, auditory, gustatory, what else you want to say, was all combined in that moment. I don't know how else to really explain it, but there was always that sense of if you're both doing this same thing and seeing the same thing, that's a form of transcendence in life, you know? And we look for those moments. I think especially artists and especially performers look for and need those moments.
In the foreword to the book by John's widow, she writes, "John was well loved, he knew it, and he reciprocated a hundredfold. But in all the years I spent with John, I'd rarely seen him make a new friend." Enter Tom Piazza. Do you think about, I would think about this. Do you think about what it was about you, what it was about the two of you that clicked and allowed that relationship to take place?
In the book, I write about taking a trip up to Indiana after John's passing. To visit with his longtime guitarist, Jason Wilbur, because Jason had traveled with John, for over 20 years, and it was his main guitarist, lead guitarist, accompanying guitarist also. And Jason said something interesting to me. He said, "If for famous people, they don't like being treated like a famous person." They don't want it's like turning somebody into a thing or an object, He said famous people, artists especially, don't they're looking for somebody who's just going to be normal with them or as normal as can be. And I think that was part of it. I just never experienced that relationship with John primarily, as an interviewer and subject experience from the very beginning when we were in that car in Florida in that Coupe de Ville. It was never, boy, oh boy, am I getting a good article here? Let me see if I can get him to talk about this or that. It was just, let's hit go and see where we go. And that was a, how would you say, a posture that was extremely comfortable for both of us. And I think that's why it worked so well. Plus, we had a similar sense of humor. Plus, we both like to eat. We both like to drink. We both like to tell stories. We both like to sing, and play guitar. And so, I guess if you put that all together, maybe it sort of makes for a friendship.
You write in the book, I mean, it was you were supposed to meet in mid-March of that year in 2020, and it was you actually who had some symptoms and were concerned and called off the meeting that you had planned to do interviews. And which, while yours turned out just to be a cold or sniffles, it was then when John's wife contacted you and said that John had indeed contracted COVID.
Well, the sequence of the way that happened, yes, was we had that fantastic weekend at the end of February of 2020, and then we made an arrangement to have our next go at it on, I think it was March 12th. And so I called though because I had the sniffles. And at that time anything was kind of, is this COVID?
Yes, right.
And so I called Fiona to see if, this would be a bad idea for me to come up, given how, because also John's health was very fragile. He had beaten throat cancer back in, I think it was 1996, plus or minus, and then he had lung cancer again and beat that in 2013. But still, a lot of other things came with all that. And John had a lot of health challenges. So I didn't want to be the guy who came up, with COVID and got John sicker. So Fiona, John's spouse, Fiona Whalen Prine, sort of said, yeah, maybe it would be better to cancel this big dinner that we had planned and sort of just see where things were going. And John and I exchanged emails during that period. But what happened was shortly thereafter, Fiona got COVID. And so they worked that out however they worked it out. But she came out the other end of COVID, I guess, within a week or so, whatever. But by the time she came out, John was starting to get the symptoms. And then pretty quickly, he had to be moved to the ICU there in Nashville. And on April 7th, he died. It was, what can I say? It was one of the hardest things I've ever had to deal with in some ways. In writing the book, I was also really aware that I'd only known John really was less than 2 years. And there were so many people, are so many people who knew John for longer than that. And, so how did I have the right to be so, what can I say, unhorsed by that loss in my life? But there it is. I think, as I put it in the book, I mean, I guess it's like the song that Abby Lincoln used to sing, "Shallow Ain't Deep." And I don't know, it was just one of those things. Our friendship went deep quick, and the loss was tremendous. And then you start thinking, after a loss like that, what do I do to manage that loss? I think the way I put it in the book was, how do you walk away without turning your back? And in a way, this book is is sort of an extended cadenza on that question.
You ask all those questions as you admit, going into the final chapters of the book that you didn't know how you were going to write it. You didn't know what you were going to say. That was hard.
Yes, going back and writing about our relationship while we were both alive was, in a lot of ways, just a great pleasure. It was also difficult because obviously I was at that point writing about a departed friend, but it was good to go over those things and remember some of those things. A certain part of the book is dedicated to that original road trip that we took that became an article. So that's full of, yo ho ho, high times. And then little by little, John's susceptibility to these health challenges became more and more sort of foregrounded in the texture of his career, his performances. So, of course, the beginning of the book was actually the beginning of a book to be. So we both sort of agreed on it, and we had sort of made certain steps in the direction of finding the right publisher for it. But after John died, it became a different project, of course. It was no longer John Prine's memoir. It was something else. It was a book about a friendship, certainly. It was also a book about mortality and loss, and a book about gratitude, and a book full of good times, just the whole package. But it was, and I'll tell you, and it was also a challenge to try to find the right distance for myself as a person and as a writer, because I was so close to John. We had gotten so close in such a short time that I realized I somehow needed to export whatever I learned from that and be not primarily close to John, really, in the writing of the book, but close to the reader. Because the whole point of the book was to deliver an experience of John and of the kind of relationship he could have with the world, for which I guess I was a stand-in, how to convey to the reader an experience of John and an experience of being with John. And that's the closest I could come, if it doesn't sound funny to say it, to bringing him as alive in my own mind and heart again, as possible for myself and for the reader.
Well, it's a just a beautiful book and so moving and so beautifully written as your work is wont to be. The name of it is Living in the Present with John Prine. It is published by Norton. Tom Piazza, I thank you very much as always for being with us. It's a delight to speak to you. I thank you for your work. Thank you for your friendship, and it's just terrific to talk to you. Thank you very much.
It's always such a pleasure, Joe. Thank you.
Be well. Thank you. Again, Tom Piazza is the author of the new book, Living in the Present with John Prine. Tom will be at the Saratoga Book Festival on October 4th for a presentation at Cafe Lena in Saratoga called, appropriately enough, Living in the Present with John Prine, Songs and Stories. You can find out more information by going to the Saratoga Book Festival webpage, which is friends.sspl.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.